Hey y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific time. We welcome your calls during the live show. You can call in just to listen by phone, or if you have a question or comment you'd like to contribute, you're welcome to do that as well. The number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week with your questions or suggestions for this program on the air. Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com. Mayer at homefirst.com. And attorney at vaccinerights.com. Attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is November 3rd, getting into Mayer's favorite time of year, the cold. I'm being quite I'm a little sarcastic about that one, I think. Yeah. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips and my co-host, wonderful dear friend, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Mayer, is it getting chilly in Chicago yet?
It's pretty nice today, you know. But you know what? I tell you, the bottom line is it makes no difference where you live, although I'd rather be in our residence in Florida in a sense. But I have so many just wonderful, all my family's here in Chicago, my practice is here in Chicago, and so the warm practice and the warm family makes up for the coming impending cold weather.
Much warmer than the coldest of cold, I'm sure.
Alan, I guess something really important.
Ahead.
You know, Mike Adams, our dear friend and the overall CEO of Natural News and the radio show that we're privileged to be on, rebroadcast on Natural News, wrote an article a couple days ago. U.S. government, Ebola is safer than the flu. High-risk carriers free to mingle with the public. And that's in response to the court order allowing the nurse, Casey, I can't think of her last name, to roam around the country, you know, with limited type of quarantine. And he talked about how if a student in grammar school or high school or preschool is not vaccinated, they are put in a quarantine from the school. They're not allowed to be in school, which is the most preposterous thing. You know, but the thing is, it's the mindset. If there's a vaccine that we have to allegedly resolve an infectious disease, then not getting the vaccine puts you in a pariah state that you have to be isolated. But if there's no vaccine, then you're free to do whatever you want. I am ashamed of this nurse, ashamed of her. I mean, I'm ashamed of the ACLU who is willing to put up an attorney to fight for this. This has nothing to do with freedom. This has to do with public safety. And even though the risk of catching Ebola is relatively small, but it's devastating if you do catch it, she should know better. Instead of being a champion for civil rights at that point or freedom, she goes ahead and she makes this big statement that I'm no risk to the public. I want to believe in the science. Well, there is no science here. All we know is that you could become, you could be totally, allegedly Ebola free for 21, 31 days, allegedly, because it's brewing in your system. It doesn't just mysteriously appear overnight, you know, and this, in my mind, is as irresponsible as can be. I just don't know what to say. And then a judge who has no clue about health care or anything like that makes a decision, all political.
It is nuts. I mean, if you're going to go under the assumption, Mayor, by what they're telling us in mainstream news, in particular that Ebola is real and has a high death rate and so forth, it really makes no sense. And it's so crazy that it leaves me wondering, is this something that is being thrust upon us as a whole scam just for the sake of heightening fears and concerns or justifying future outbreaks? Oh, I guess we were wrong, and look at all the people she's infected now. Or, I mean, it's when things get this crazy, I have to start asking, are we really all this stupid, or is this a deliberate setup for some other purpose? And that's, I'm not going to take a stand one way or the other on that, but I will just say it seems to raise the question in my mind, because it is so senseless on the surface. If there's any chance that somebody has a highly or even potentially highly contagious, or even not highly contagious but virulent, and if we believe everything we're being told, this is a disease that has a phenomenally high death rate. I mean, it's a no-brainer, Mayor. You quarantine if you've been over there involved with that at all. You quarantine when you come back. That's just normal procedure, not even unique to Ebola, but normal procedure with respect to infectious diseases generally. So it doesn't make any sense to me either. So much so that it leaves me wondering, is it even really true what they're reporting, or is this something that's been set up for some other reason, again, to heighten the fear so they'll sell more vaccines later or whatever. But I agree with you, it makes no sense.
Makes absolutely no sense, you know. But I tell you, it may be a good argument, Alan, to realize that maybe we have to look at this false science of not allowing children in school who have who aren't vaccinated, because you know I still find it funny and I can't figure it out that if you have a medical or a religious waiver, does all of a sudden that put a shield of protection around you that you're allowed to go to school? But if you say no, I'm just not going to do it, then you have no protection.
Well, if there's any sort of an outbreak, and these days, as I'm sure you're well aware, they define outbreak as one case of chickenpox or anything else. Outbreak sometimes is defined in general terms of anything greater than normal or usual, and so usual these days is nothing. So that a single case of chickenpox, which even the CDC admits usually outbreaks start in vaccinated kids, so a vaccinated kid gets the chickenpox and all the unvaccinated kids with exemptions have to stay home. None of that makes sense to me medically or legally. In fact, the reason it doesn't make sense to me legally is because it doesn't make sense medically, because generally medicine and mainstream medicine and law are pretty closely aligned. But the theory being if you're unvaccinated or a child is unvaccinated, they have to stay home from school during an outbreak because that child is a risk to him or herself and potentially spreading a disease to others. Of course, who are the others that they would be spreading to? The ones who are vaccinated. Well, if they're vaccinated, what are they concerned about? But even officials, if you press them on it, will acknowledge that vaccines don't work in everybody. And under the herd immunity theory, they don't need to work in everybody. As long as most people are vaccinated, everyone supposedly is protected, as long as most people are immune. But the problem with making the exempt kids stay home is that there is a far greater number of non-immune vaccinated kids. Because even the CDC says 5 to 15% of vaccinated kids don't develop immunity from the vaccines. And as Dr. Obakanich would tell us, even many of the ones whose vaccines do produce the desired antibody response, those antibody levels will, in many cases anyway, wane over time. So even the ones whose vaccines do work probably only work temporarily. But the bottom line, Mayor, is for every kid they send home who's exempt, and the CDC says that exempt kids can have natural immunity without even developing symptoms. So they're sending home exempt kids who may not be lacking immunity, but even if we assume they are lacking immunity, there's something on the order of five times, maybe 10 times as many vaccinated children left at school who didn't develop immunity from the vaccines in the first place or whose immunity has waned since they were last vaccinated. And none of those kids have to stay home for being not immune, but the exempt kids who may or may not be immune have to stay home presumptively lacking immunity. So to make any sense scientifically, and therefore it is discriminatory at least with respect to those kids whose parents are exercising religious exemption, in those situations it would be discriminating against them because of their religious beliefs. None of it makes sense.
Now, let me ask you another question here. What if someone refuses to take the hepatitis B vaccine? And on what basis are they expelling them from school? What risk are they to other children or to themselves if they don't take a vaccine that's purely for a sexually transmitted disease? What's the argument they would make?
Mayor, that's easy. They're a risk of setting an example of following science and common sense, and we can't allow that to happen in the public schools because then kids will grow up thinking for themselves, you know, and rejecting vaccines altogether if we let them, function in logical, coherent manner.
It's depressing, you know, because, you know, and that's why this nurse, see, I love nurses. As you know, two of my daughters are nurse practitioners, and I want to give a shout out to my daughter, who's my partner in my practice, who's going to be getting her doctorate this Friday. Her papers are ready. Her thesis has been accepted. And I'm really excited about going. I mean, my daughter Jen is just an incredible, not only is she an awesome mother, you know, an awesome partner in my practice, and now she's going to have her doctorate in nursing. And I have another topic for you to legally review with me, and that is there's some questionable law if she can call herself doctor of nursing, you know, in the practice. It feels wrong that she shouldn't be able to, but the MDs have done a great job of the medical doctors of saying she could not do that because it'll be misleading, you know, which is kind of interesting, you know. And so it's kind of an interesting thing that, you know, she has all the legal rights to practice. She's completed all the criteria for being a doctor of nursing, you know, and maybe she won't be able to. Jen doesn't mind this. She says, "Dad, will you forget it? Who cares about that?" You know. But it's kind of an interesting question, also.
It is, and it's one of those questions that's a state by state question. And I encountered the same thing myself with the Juris Doctor degree. You know, when you graduate law school nowadays, you graduate with a Juris Doctor degree, which is a doctoral degree. And yet it turns out, now I'm sort of jumping tracks here because I don't know the specific answer to your question. I will say that I think anybody who completes a doctoral program deserves to go by the title of doctor. But the only place I have any insight at all is in the legal arena with the Juris Doctor degree, and so I would suspect, I'll put it like this. First of all, Mayor, the only time I've ever heard of somebody with a doctoral degree not being allowed to call themselves doctor or represent themselves as doctor to the public has been in the legal profession. And apparently that varies from state to state. And it was really funny, Mayor, because here in North Carolina, we're not allowed to call ourselves doctors because it can be confusing with medical doctors and people will think you're a medical doctor if you're a lawyer and call yourself doctor. That's the rationale. It's absurd because what are there, a couple of hundred different doctoral credentials you can get that are not medical doctor? And so it really is silly at this point in time, in this day and age, even if it maybe, and I don't know if it was or wasn't, but even if it was, wasn't a silly distinction maybe in past decades or whatever, but these days I think it's silly because there's so many different kinds of doctors and people who do legitimately go by doctor whatever, but they've got a PhD or whatever,
or
doctor
psychologist,
of education,
who passes
psychologist.
For an MD. That bothers me.
Well,
because a nurse who has a doctorate is a high level functioning medical practitioner, you know, and it's kind
yeah.
of like it bothers me a lot because nurses are many times, in most places, called by their first name. Now, I don't mind if someone calls me by their first name, but I don't like the. I remember when I was a practicing physician, 1 or 2 years after my residency, and I had worked at one of the hospitals where the two head nurses in OB were both about 30 years older than me, and they would call me Dr. Eisenstein, and they insisted I call them Mary and Jane. It was like, it was bothersome. It was really bothersome, you know. It was kind of
yeah.
like, they didn't find it disrespectful. They said, their answer was, heck, they said, you know, that makes us younger than you. You know, but it was... And I never could get past that. I never called them by their first name, and they would always correct me, you know. And but it was just kind of like a separate type of issue that's kind of bothersome. See, I think nurses are incredible healthcare professionals. I have such great respect for them, as I do for chiropractors, because they really embody healthcare for the most part. And that's why if you take a look at the mothers and who are questioning vaccines, a huge percentage, way disproportionate to the number of nurses percentage-wise in this country, are the ones on the front line questioning vaccines. And I think it's because they have seen firsthand what the vaccines have done. They've read the literature, and they've come to a conclusion, you know, that this has to be questioned very, very seriously.
I was a guest on another show once, and the hostess referred to me as Dr. Phillips, and I very politely explained that in North Carolina, at least, I wasn't allowed to be referred to as doctor. And she explained later that the reason she called me that is she'd had an attorney on from another state as a previous guest who insisted on being called doctor. So apparently, you know, it just varies from state to state. And you'd have to look to probably the, I would think, the nursing board or someone like that to get a... Hopefully
exactly.
Get a clear answer
I want to bring
question.
Up one more thing that we've talked about
sure.
many times before, and I continuously get emails, which from families who just aren't sure about religious waivers, you know, and they said everything is confusing, and those are the people who are very sharp because the people who aren't sharp just find a letter and they put it together, and as you've mentioned many times, Alan, it works quite well for all practicality until it gets down to a couple of cases where someone questions it. At least works from a standpoint. It's not what the controlling factor is, you know. And I'd like you to spend a minute or two telling everyone about your outstanding book and the consultations that you do, because I think this is important. I refer all of them to you. And one of the nurses, I said, can you get together 5 or 10 nurses? This is the nurses now, it's switching a little bit. And she said, I think I could do that. I said, explain what it is that you do as far as helping individuals and nurses, and especially nurses who could put together 5, 6, or 7 nurses at their hospital, especially now when the flu vaccines become totally mandated.
Well, thanks, Mayor. I appreciate it. I'm glad to take a few minutes to talk about that. It's so disheartening because every year is another wave of hospitals coming on board with flu vaccine mandates. They are spouting this propaganda, some of which, if we have time tonight, I'd like to talk about. John Rappaport has done a really good job of explaining and looking at information from Peter Doshi and others about flu vaccines and about how the statistics that the CDC gives us are profoundly misleading about the flu. And nurses, as you know, Mayor, are among some of the best people out there at doing their research and finding out that these flu policies just don't make sense. But I don't know any reason, as a starting place, why a hospital can't mandate a flu shot as a condition of employment unless it's a situation where there's a contractual relationship, such as if there's a nurses union or something, you know, there's a contractual relationship there and one party in a contract can't unilaterally change the terms. But most nurses and healthcare workers around the country are the so-called at-will employee. They can be fired at any time for no reason, and many employment law attorneys will tell them, there's nothing you can do. Well, even if they can fire you at any time for no reason, they can't fire you for an unlawful reason. So if you have qualifying religious objections to vaccines under federal civil rights law, because, see, most of the state exemption laws just apply to students, not to employees, but federal civil rights law gives you an out on religious grounds. And it doesn't matter whether or not you belong to any church or religious organization or subscribe to any named religion at all. And if you do belong to an organization, it doesn't matter which one. Legally, all that matters is your personal religious beliefs or your personal interpretation of whatever your religion is. You could be the only person on the planet, whether or not you belong to a church or religious organization, that has your beliefs, and if they meet the legal criteria, which are fairly broad and simple, then those beliefs are protected by law. But there are pitfalls here as well. You know, almost anyone can potentially qualify for a religious exemption in the workplace, but how you put together a statement of religious beliefs opposed to vaccines gets a lot trickier. And in my experience, Mayor, most people who attempt this on their own from a very reasonable, common sense place will wander into one or more of what I call legal pitfalls, things that can backfire on them. And this arena is further complicated by the fact that in my experience to date anyway, and at this point I've worked with probably about 350 healthcare workers around the country, most of the employers, the hospitals, make up their own religious exemption policies, and they're overly restrictive. They violate federal civil rights law. So this is a difficult arena. And I don't know any way to make this next comment, Mayor, without being self-serving, but so be it, because that's the only way I know to say it. This is an arena where if it's really important to you, you have, based on the feedback I've gotten from my clients, it's very difficult to pull this off on your own. And you really should consider, if it's really serious to you, consider working with an attorney. Mayor, I'm the only attorney in the country who does what I do with the level that I do it. I could justify by market forces, if you want to think of it that way, because there's nobody else out there doing that, I could charge $400 or $500 an hour. Attorneys who are less specialized than me, you know, charge that much or more for what they do. But I charge much, much less than that. But I do something even, I go even farther in two different ways in this arena to keep my costs really low for people. And one is that I charge people for 2 hours, but typically spend 4 or 5 hours of my time for those 2 hours charged. And I also do, as you were alluding to earlier, group consultations. Now, this time of year, Mayor, I just schedule a weekly group consultation that anyone in the country can join, whether they're from the same hospital or same state or not, because the federal civil rights law is the same law for everyone all over the country. If someone has a group that they want to bring to me and schedule a different time than my regularly scheduled group times, then we can do that too. But when I do group consultations, it lowers the price even further. And I know some people say, and I've seen this, for example, on the Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines Facebook page, for example, where somebody says, well, not everybody can afford an attorney. And all I can say to that is two things. If it's really important, it's worth at least looking into. And don't assume you can't afford an attorney until you find out what it costs. There is
and
nobody
let me
in the country.
Let me interject something, Alan.
Yeah.
Can you afford to get a flu shot, which is going to clearly, with a high degree of probability, cause you problems, possibly even missing 3 or 4 days of work? Then you have to start thinking about what that cost is. You know, I think being an attorney, but even not before I was an attorney, I always felt you can't walk into a battle without legal representation. It's kind of no different than I've advocated to all the groups that help fight this battle of unnecessary vaccination, mandatory vaccination. Don't go on radio or TV as a layperson without having a professional with you who supports your position, because you'll get picked on. That's the same thing what you're talking about, Alan. You know, outside of the fact of not knowing the law very well, they're going to be picked on very easily without an attorney. There's a whole different game when there's an attorney involved in the case.
Mayor, I've done everything I can to try to strike a balance between I deserve to make a living and I don't really make a particularly great one, speaking economically, with the work that I do. The vast majority of what I spend my time on, I don't even bill for to begin with. And that's really sort of a side issue here. I do everything I can to make it as reasonably accessible as I can, and I don't know how I can go any farther, you know, than what I've already done. But if somebody comes to me and says, I literally can't afford your rates, you know, talk to me or email me. We'll figure out something to do. My goal is not to see how much money I can make with a law degree. If I wanted to do that, I wouldn't touch this. I'd go do family law, personal injury, or something else. But I went to law school because of my concern about this issue, and so this is what I do. And I joke about it, probably with some truth, Mayor. You know, I say, I'm not sure, you know, I actually went back to school after 17 years and picked law school because of my concern about vaccines. Now, whether that makes me a saint or an idiot depends on your perspective, and I don't have a label for myself, and I don't really care which label people use for me. But the point is, there's a couple of good reasons that there isn't anybody else doing this work. And one is you probably ruin your local reputation as an attorney. Well, I don't have a local reputation. I work with clients around the country. I don't even interact with local attorneys. I used to joke about it, Mayor, but with a certain amount of truth, people would say, well, what do you do? And I'd say, I'm an attorney, but don't worry, I hate lawyers as much as you do. And because I have, you know, many years' experience as a client as well, and I've seen great attorneys and judges, and I've seen really disturbing things from both perspectives, as a client and as an attorney. You know, there are problems in the legal profession, as well as wonderful people, just like there is in the healthcare arena. But my goal here is to help as many people as I can avoid immunizations who want to avoid them, and I know there are far more people out there that could use my help than are getting it. And I don't think you'll find anyone who has as much experience and insight or personal commitment to the issue. And there are a lot of attorneys that are smarter than me, Mayor, but I don't think there are any who have been as immersed in this issue as I am.
And
if you can find,
And
the ones, if you find them, if you find any that are willing to help you, that's terrific. There are other attorneys that can help, but
we need more.
Well, but they're going to charge you a lot more, and they're going to know it a lot less. And so, I do the best I can.
I want to make one point before we go to break, and that is, if you're a nurse starting in at work, or your nurse been at work for many years and never gotten the flu vaccine, let's just stick to that arena right now. The problem isn't going to be this year. The problem is going to be next year, the year afterwards. And you got to kind of look at it in the sense that you're making a long-term investment. You know, once you bring an attorney into the game here, especially you, Alan, you know, it's unlike, there's a high probability that it'll be good next year, the year after, the year after. They know what they're up against, as opposed to, I've had so many nurses who said they wrote a religious waiver, they accepted it, and now this year they're not accepting it anymore. You know, so
I've heard the same thing, Mayor.
Yeah. Excellent, Alan. Let me tell you something. I not only commend you for what you do, but, you know, there's something about going to bed at night and feeling really good about what you've done, and what, and, you know, even though you can't put the heat on because you can't afford it, you know, being just a little bit facetious, you know. I'm very excited about what you do, Alan. You know, and you're an inspiration to many other lawyers there. Don't count it out. The number will be growing. Our phone number is 646-478-0772. I think, Alan, we got to go to break. And after break, Alan and I will be right back.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Where did we leave off, Mayor? Or where shall we leap forward to?
Well, I think, Alan, you gave a good understanding that this is a, you know, everyone believes it's serious, but how important it is, if at all possible, to get it right the first time. And getting it right the first time really, I hate to use the word requires, but it's highly suggestible, it's highly advisable to hire you, Alan, to be able to resolve the issue up front as far as the whole vaccine issue. Very, very important.
Well, the Mayor, just one real quick comment and we'll move on here, but the clients that are most difficult for me to help are the ones who have tried it on their own first and gotten rejected, and then they come to me, because it's really hard once you have put something out there to come back later and say, forget what I said earlier, or oops, what I really meant to say was, and then to change it. If you approach it right from the start, you give yourself the best chance possible of success, and at least in theory, once you nail it down, you have it nailed down. You know, once you establish your right in the belief, and unless you change jobs and then the next employer has an unlawful policy or something radical changes where you are, you shouldn't be in a situation where once you've nailed it down, you're not hiring an attorney every year, every time you have to, ask for the exemption again. Because most employers will make you request it every year. They're not going to miss a chance to get you to change your mind. But you get it down once, and as you say, it's a good long-term investment. Well, Mayor, there's tons of things going on in the news here. I keep seeing articles from time to time of people talking about claiming that Ebola is a lie. It's actually not a virus that spread, but is something that the Red Cross has brought here. And one article recently says to four specific countries for four specific reasons. And they say it's actually not about depopulation, because there's so many people born every day in Africa, you can't depopulate Africa with Ebola, at least in the way they're, you know, presenting it. But it's more about getting control of the oil and diamonds and getting having a reason to put troops on the ground there and control on other levels. And, you know, I don't have information to confirm or deny these stories. I just am reporting that I continue to see them. And, you know, they raise some questions. But I think part of what you're going to have with any kind of, especially something in the healthcare arena, infectious disease, anytime you've got an ongoing story, you're going to see the so-called conspiracy theories coming up around that. And what we discovered during the swine flu pandemic, Mayor, is that some of those conspiracy theories turned out to be true. And so it's going to be interesting to see which, if any, of the ones associated with Ebola turn out to be true. You know, are they creating a vaccine to depopulate? Are they using Ebola as an excuse just to for people to get control of resources in Africa? Or are they really putting in the microchips in the Ebola vaccines they're making? You know, these are all things that, at least in theory, are, hypothetically valid stories, and yet it may be that any, all, or none of them turn out to be true. I don't know if you have any particular thoughts on the general or specifics here, Mayor. I just throw this all out there again.
Yeah. I wrote a piece about 4 years ago, and it was kind of it was a takeoff, or it was a continuation of a Wall Street Journal article which talked about the flu vaccine, and it was just fabulous. And I'll try to get the link up on my website. It was a husband who kept taking the flu vaccine and kept getting sick every year. And then he said, and this year I'm just going to tell my employer I got the flu vaccine, but I won't go and get it. And it was BS in, BS out. And I said, there's vaccines don't cause autism. The world is really flat, not round. And the third one was that, I'm still late at night, you know. Oswald killed Kennedy, and then I said, "Oops, maybe that one was not true," you know. And I think that the problem is when things don't line up the way they should be, or you start questioning, and it's not even conspiracy. Isn't that scientific investigation? Well, you're looking for the absolute truth, and all of a sudden you find things that don't match up with truth. And talk about Oswald and Kennedy. I spoke a couple of years ago in Dallas, and I went to the street there where the book depository was, and something bothered me greatly. And that was that, first of all, it was much closer than I thought it was, the distance between where allegedly Oswald shot Kennedy. But one of the problems was that the president's brain flew backwards. His car is going in one direction, and the brain went backwards. It's the opposite of what something goes. If you shoot something that's past you, it doesn't go behind. And they had exactly the spot there where the president was shot, where part of his skull and brain were found. It just didn't make sense. You know, it was more indicative of someone who shot you from the front. And I remember this from law school, where we had cases like that. I had one case, it was a mock trial, where someone leaves a gas station and with a gun, and he shoots someone. There was a question if he did the shooting or someone else did the shooting. And one of the things was he was running away from the person he shot, but the bullet came from the other direction. And so you have things like that, and then you take a look at what's happening here with the Red Cross and the Gates Foundation, notoriously not good people, or not out to help people. And today I just heard that the Gates Foundation just gave $500 million to fight infectious diseases around the world. This is the same foundation that owns interest in many of the pharmaceutical industries which are making vaccines. This is a good investment. You know, you invest $500 million to get back $2 or $3 billion. You know, this is not charitable. This is a business. And business doesn't follow the same ethics as allegedly science is supposed to. And so I listened to all these theories, and I said, you know, there's always a little bit of truth to every one of them. And we already know how much you've reported how the pharmaceutical industry, how they're slapped on the wrist with penalties, which are so minuscule. And I'm not sure which one's the company that was just caught making up their data on the measles or mumps vaccine, just falsified the data, you know, and they paid a few million dollars, you know, in inconsequential compared to the billions that they make from the vaccine.
Yeah, well, you raise some really good points, Mayor. When the story that's put out in the mainstream news doesn't add up, then you leave holes for people to explore, to try and figure out how to connect the dots. And to one degree or another, some of these, the so-called conspiracy theories, although that phrase is also used just as a way to discredit or discount people who are getting too close to the truth, there can be a certain amount of speculation that goes on in these, let's say, alternative theories, alternative to whatever is being put out on mainstream media. But they often make much more sense than the story that's being put out as the official story, which it's because of the inconsistencies or gaps in the official story that so many of these alternative theories spring up in the first place, at least many times. So And then, of course, there are times where people do their digging, do their research. They come up with you know, just really solid information at times. But because it's not the mainstream view, it fights to get attention. And, of course, is quickly dismissed as being conspiracy, even if it is something that is quite clear. So just a real quick example with the swine flu. We had Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, the epidemiologist, German epidemiologist who had been the, I forget the title now, he's with the Subcommittee on Health for the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, head of this Subcommittee on Health. I mean, that's about as mainstream as you can get, and this is a political organization with 45 European nations that are members. And he's head of the Subcommittee on Health, and he went public in early 2010 and said the swine flu pandemic was a hoax. Not that there wasn't a swine flu virus or that it had spread internationally, but that the World Health Organization, and by the way, over the objections of many countries, changed the definition of level 6, their highest level for a pandemic, something you would reserve for the most severe pandemic. They changed the definition of level 6 such that a mild disease like the swine flu pandemic at the time would qualify for level 6. And when it got to level 6, it got that level 6 declaration, that triggered contract clauses between pharmaceutical companies and countries around the world for the sale of $18 billion worth of vaccines. So whether there was anything else going on or not, there was a huge money grab. And the vast majority of those vaccines were never even administered. The U.S. threw out $260 million of expired vaccines. Countries like Japan had something like, I guess it was $800 and something million worth of unused vaccines. And France and England both bought enough swine flu vaccines to vaccinate most of their countries and only ended up actually administering between 5 and 10% of the population getting vaccines. So it was just an enormous money grab, and there are people who are saying that even if nothing else is going on with Ebola, they're planning to do just another huge money grab with Ebola. They're going to create enough fear so that people line up down the street like they did for swine flu vaccines. They'll be lined up for their Ebola vaccines, and they'll make billions of dollars off of it, whether it's really an effective vaccine or not, whether there's even really a virus that we should get vaccinated from in the first place or not. So we'll just have to see how it plays out and check the, you know, the different information and different sources, because to one degree or another, I think what's going on here may be what people say is going on or may be going on, may be speculation. But over time, the truth eventually will come out and the evidence for it gets clearer and clearer. At least that's what we saw in the swine flu situation. I'm sure we'll see a parallel or similar situation here with the Ebola and Ebola vaccines, which have already gone into testing.
And there's a great article in this week in The Age of Autism by our dear friend Kathy Jameson, who writes that the drug manufacturers are seeking indemnity for fast-tracking Ebola vaccines. And it's very interesting because they already have indemnity in the United States, but they're looking for worldwide indemnity so that they can essentially bear no risk in this game. Unbelievable. Why would a vaccine that's so safe require indemnity? it makes no sense to me. I mean, there's no indemnity for anything else in this world. You know, why should there be indemnity? Put the risk on the doctor, or even worse, let the patient bear the risk.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, the answer is always one that doesn't make sense if you think in sort of common sense terms from the perspective of the common person, citizen, resident. But it makes perfect sense if you think from the perspective of maximizing profits, because you do that by minimizing risks or accountability. And they have really mastered that, the pharmaceutical companies here in the U.S., with, you know, for any practical purposes, absolutely no liability for anything that goes wrong with the vaccine, which means they have absolutely no incentive at all to no motivation whatsoever to create the safest possible vaccine or the most effective possible vaccine. In fact, as you pointed out, they're lying about the effectiveness just, again, to maximize the profits here. So it's just amazing how far this industry will go, putting profit over the lives and well-being of other people. What is it about money that can be so profoundly important that it's okay to devalue other people's lives? I can't wrap my mind around it, Mayor, and it makes me wonder about the sanity or lack thereof of a lot of the people in these key decision-making positions.
Well, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, this has been going on for about 40 years, and you have to assume that all of this was mapped out very well. I never assume successful business people to leave things to chance. And the mindset of the average American person, maybe even in the world, is that it's almost a knee-jerk infectious disease vaccine. Every TV show, every movie you see about that, it's always the same. Some epidemic breaks out. How do we come up with a vaccine to solve the problem? And I think they've done a great job marketing that, and so that it's going to be very difficult to change the paradigm that's not the answer. But I think they've done a great job. I was watching a TV show a few weeks ago. It was called The Last Ship or something like that. And there was some epidemic that broke out around the world. It's killed millions and millions of people. And on the ship, they had a scientist who was coming up with the cure for this this infectious disease. You know, it's like it makes for such a good story and sounds so clean and sounds so wonderful. The only trouble is it's not true. That's the only problem with it, you know. But it's a paradigm that we're going to have. And that's what essentially we're up against. We're up against a false narrative that that has to be changed, you know. And the public, you know, they've been so inculcated, indoctrinated with it, it's very difficult to get this mindset out of the public. And I think that's the reason why hospitals, nursing schools, medical schools have an easy job, because they've put the paradigm that if there's an infectious disease, you've got to be vaccinated. There's just so much, there's years of building this up. One of the most interesting things, and I've mentioned this before, I can't remember who sent it to me, in 1809, in the British Parliament, there was a group of parliamentarians who were trying to stop the mandate of the smallpox vaccine. And the articles they brought and the testimony they brought was that when there was no increased death rate in England during any smallpox epidemic, what they found was during the smallpox epidemic, people didn't die from other infectious diseases. So the overall mortality didn't change. And the introduction of the vaccine did not change the overall mortality. I think this is a really important point, because it's kind of like mammograms, which is one of my best examples. Every study has shown that if you have a group of women who receive mammograms, routine, and a group who doesn't, there is not 1 second increase in life expectancy from the group who received mammograms. But what they're trying to do is shift the golden rule, and the golden rule is death or life, to more discovery of breast cancer. But that's not the golden rule or the golden nugget. The golden nugget is you live longer. And they've never been able to show that. And it's the same thing with prostate cancer screening. All they could show is they come up with more cases of prostate cancer. They don't show long-term survival as being better. In fact, when I was in medical school, the paradigm was that we were taught men die in old age with prostate cancer. Today, it's men die in younger age from prostate cancer.
And is it just a different label for the same thing? Is that the essence of what you're saying?
Even a better example, sexually transmitted diseases. Are we better off today with sexually transmitted diseases? Well, if we look at syphilis or gonorrhea, yeah, we're better off. But that's not the right answer. You got to step back and say, are we better off today from sexually transmitted diseases? No, we're worse off. Look at all the other sexually transmitted that we have. AIDS, herpes, hepatitis C. And so we've got all these different sexually transmitted diseases. And so if you answer the question, if you phrase it as, are we better off with syphilis, the answer is yes. But if you change it, are we better off with infectious diseases, the answer is no. And that's medicine doing a very nice job of pigeonholing the question so it doesn't really address the real issue. It addresses just, you know, the one that they found a temporary, and I say very temporary, solution, because all these viruses and bacteria like syphilis, gonorrhea are mutating, and now we're finding that the antibiotics, which were very effective 20 and 30 years ago, aren't effective at all.
Boy, it's really interesting, Mayor, when you put these things in perspective, and it reminds me when I was reading something about when the practice of bloodletting, which I think probably in the 1700s, 1800s was common practice, maybe when anybody had a fever, for example, if I understand correctly. But somewhere in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they finally let go of that. But I was reading somewhere that they were saying that the reason they were no longer going to be doing bloodletting as they had done routinely up to that point was because the nature of disease had changed and they no longer needed to do that. There was, which reads to me like quite a stretch in an attempt to save face or to avoid saying we just realized we've been wrong all this time. And I've wondered, you know, are we really going to do humanity a favor if we look for some way to allow the people who are ultimately responsible for the tragedy that vaccination has been and increasingly is, if we give them an out somewhere? You know, can we just declare that the nature of disease has changed once again and now we no longer need to vaccinate? You know, it would be better to...
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. You know,
stop the damage. You know,
yeah.
And I, as much as the idea of letting somebody not ultimately be held accountable bothers me, you know, I'd rather them get away with it if the damage stops than to insist on holding them accountable and have them continue to exert their control and continue the harm and the damage. But
there's only one trouble with that, Alan. There's only one trouble.
Huh.
My late mentor, Dr. Mendelsohn, used to say, doctors and drug companies don't let go of one treatment until they find a more dangerous one to replace it. And so I think they'll let that go when they come up with some other type of nonsensical theory of what to do. Antibiotics are the perfect example. You know, they give up on one antibiotic and go to another one, which is more dangerous than the one that we were taking before.
Well, this is where the principles of you reap what you sow, or karma, or other variations of the one way or another, whether on this plane of existence or somewhere else, that there is ultimately justice in the universe, and I just pray that that indeed is the case. But I don't know, Mayor. I don't know what the out is for all of this, but I know that we have to keep looking for it and keep trying and doing everything we can to do what we're doing here on this show to help keep people informed, to help keep learning ourselves and sharing what we've learned and experienced, and raising awareness. And however it unfolds and however it ultimately resolves, I feel that the work we do here and elsewhere, Mayor, and all the people that share in this in whatever way that they do, that contributes to the positive end that we're all seeking. So let's keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Thank you, my dear friend.
You too. Take care, folks. Well, let's see here. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Proudly rebroadcast on naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We will see you next week, folks. Thank you so much for being here with us. Take care.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny.